Significant Business Results Radio features concise and compelling interviews with entrepreneurs and business leaders. Listen as they identify factors that drive innovation and measure significant business results. Be inspired and influenced by their insights and outcomes. Hosted by Fran McNeil, President of Significant Business Results, LLC.
Well, welcome to Significant Business Results. I'm your host, Fran McNeil, and joining me in the virtual studio from New York City, no, actually from Princeton, is David Spergel. And David is an astrophysicist that's going to share with us his unfair advantage to growing both slowly and quickly, and how he's built an organization in just under 11 months and has been able to attract Nobel laureates to visit his institute, the Flatiron Institute, to be exact. David, welcome to Significant Business Results Radio. How are you doing this evening?
Very good. Pleasure to be here.
Thank you. Thank you, David. Well, David, in my intro of you, I mentioned that you're an astrophysicist. Now, most of the entrepreneurs that I interview do not have that title in their background. So let's just first start with the basics. How did you get involved in that profession?
I was always good at and enjoyed math and physics. When I got to college, I took a class on general relativity where we learned about black holes and cosmology, and I was really intrigued by that. And then I started to work on research on different topics in astrophysics, first as a undergraduate at Princeton and then a graduate student at Harvard, and learned that I really liked it and got to work on profound questions like how the universe begin and what's its shape and what's most of the universe made of. So that's sort of how I got there.
How you got there. And what's interesting is from a business standpoint, a lot of entrepreneurs, while they may not use math and physics, often think about how did something begin? And where is sort of the life cycle going? So you have actually taken your love of math and science, and you not only teach, but you've created your own institute. And while many universities are doing that, or large organizations are investing in research, you sort of stepped outside and created this institute. Tell us a little bit more about your vision before it got started and what exactly the institute does.
So I'm part of a place called the Flatiron Institute, which is funded by the Simons Foundation, by Jim and Marilyn Simons, and through the foundation. And what we do is pure research in computational science. What Jim had realized was, while there are many distinguished research institutions and universities doing basic research, there was no place that was focused on computational science at a time at which computational approaches were really transforming the way we understand the universe and biology and chemistry and all sorts of things. And Jim approached me about 2 years ago and asked if I would like to lead a center at this institute. He told me they would provide funding for 55 to 60 researchers. We'd have a new building, or a remodeled building, on 5th and 21st in Manhattan. And I would get to shape how my center was run, how we would connect intellectually with other areas, and help shape the building and build a brand new institute. And this was an exciting just is an exciting challenge. There are many places like Harvard and Princeton that have been around for a very long time. And to start from scratch and create a place that is a center for intellectual excellence and has a significant impact on the field is an exciting challenge. And that's what I've been trying to do.
So almost like entrepreneurs who often have to go out, who have an idea and have to go out and find investors, you essentially had an investor come to you based on your demonstrated performance and say, I like what you're doing. I want to provide you with the resources. And you make it, you transform this idea into something that will have an impact on the world. That's a pretty exciting and significant opportunity. How did you then take it from, I think you were sharing with me earlier, four people to where you are now in only a 10-plus month time frame?
Well, I began by thinking about what unfair advantages I had in New York. And perhaps the most important one is we're embedded in this very exciting intellectual community with places like Columbia and NYU and Rutgers and Princeton and Yale and Stony Brook and CUNY all nearby. So the first thing I did was I met with the faculty at the surrounding universities, met with the administration at the surrounding universities, and tried to, and I think succeeded in convincing them that our building this new institute in New York was something of mutual benefit and that we would strengthen them and we would partner with them. And that, you know, let us first attract the other three faculties. So we have, in addition to myself, I'm joint appointed with Princeton. We have three faculty joint appointed with Columbia, NYU, and Rutgers. And that's where we started, with some really excellent people. And then started to attract people at various career stages. We've done several new hires with Columbia that are joint appointments, new hires with Stony Brook. We're setting up programs with City University of New York. We have events where we're attracting lots of people from NYU and Columbia and Yale and Rutgers. And we're becoming a central nexus for the region. And because New York is in many ways so central for the world, we've been able to attract outstanding people from out the world to come through. So I think the strategy I've basically gone for is to attract outstanding talent and create a place that people want to come and visit and interact intellectually.
That's really very powerful. And I'm hearing that people are the key to your strategy. I mean, you talked about mutually beneficial. I don't know any successful entrepreneurial venture that doesn't figure out a way to make the stakeholders all feel vested in the enterprise. And part of the stakeholders are the employees or the team members. So you talked about the different stages of hires. I'd love for you to kind of expand on that, because many entrepreneurs tend to, when they have a great idea and they do have the resources or at least some initial seed funding, they tend to hire people they know and people they like and kind of stay within that zone. But I heard you say that you looked for people with sort of a mutual investment and some synergy, but you also focused on these different stages of people's career. Can you expand on that?
So we've hired broadly people from three groups. One are people who just got their PhDs. And one of the first things I did when we went to set up the center was I wrote to people I knew throughout the world and encouraged them to have their best people apply, describe what we were trying to do. In some ways, setting up this center was something completely new. In other ways, it's something that I feel I've been preparing for my entire life. I was department chair at Princeton. I ran major committees for the National Academy of Sciences. I've had a lot of connections that I was able to take advantage of to encourage lots of people to apply. And before we opened, we had about 120 applications for the eight postdoctoral positions we filled, and were able to get some of the best recent PhDs. So that was one group we went for. The second group were sabbatical visitors. We were able to bring a lot of outstanding, or bringing a lot of outstanding senior researchers from throughout the world to come to the, New York for periods from 3 months to a year. We've brought people from South Africa, from Britain, from Israel, from Canada, and also from the United States, particularly from the local region. And this is something where I saw that we had a unique advantage. Federal funding does not support sabbaticals. So many people, when they get their sabbatical from the university, just stay. And we provided housing costs in New York and some salary support. So at the end, for a relatively modest investment, we're able to get top-rated people to come to New York and have a senior group to complement the junior group. And then a longer-term program, bringing people for long-term positions. And we hired six junior people, people say 5 years out of PhD typically, for long-term positions. And working with Columbia and Stony Brook, we've made four offers, three of which have now been accepted, to people from universities throughout the world to move to New York to new positions that will be joint positions for 3 to 6 years. And I'm hoping to get the fourth. Still working on it. I think we'll get it.
Okay. Okay. So for the entrepreneurs listening that have visions of creating an organization that has 65 employees in a relatively short period of time, maybe within 5 to 7 years, what are some transferable lessons that you've learned moving from academia now into an entrepreneurial leadership role that you'd like to share that can be takeaways for them?
One of the lessons I've learned was how important it was to make all the employees feel very much part of building the organization. A lot of the folks at the center are millennials. I think everyone is younger than me. I'm now always the oldest person in the room. And it was important to, and is very important to involve them in the process of creating the institute, creating the culture. I thought one of the most important things to get right early on was the institutional culture, to both intellectually challenge people when they suggest things, but to treat them with respect, to make sure that everyone involved in the institution felt they had a role to play. I have been encouraging the young people that I brought in to help with recruitment, to suggest people we should bring in to be involved in the interview process. And I have found their insights to be incredibly valuable, and their connections and approaches to be very complementary to my own.
Now, David, I know you from the Princeton connection. I was an American history major. You were involved in math and computational science. So, you know, in school, I don't really think our paths crossed, but as alumni, I read about you all the time, partially because you're on campus and partially because you're involved. And I find it fascinating that you're, again, now starting this organization. You're a Princeton parent. You're on campus. You, as you mentioned, again, in a previous conversation, that you work with lots of graduate students, lots of postdoc fellows, lots of undergraduates. A part of you is so connected to people who spend their time learning and yet come across challenges because you're working in a field where you're discovering. I mean, one of the comments that you made to me earlier is that you right now, we don't know what makes up 95% of the universe. And when I heard you say that, I thought, well, as entrepreneurs, a lot of times we don't know 95%, but the 5% that we do know or we do believe in, that's what helps shape our vision, and that's what we use to attract our team and to grow our enterprise. A part of what you bring to the equation, so to speak, is this sense of humor. How do you maintain a sense of humor in the face of not knowing so much?
Well, I think the fact that we know so little about the universe around us, as I mentioned to you earlier, atoms, the stuff that makes up us, makes up 5% of the universe, and we don't know what the rest of the 95% is, gives you a sense of humility, makes you realize the things that we understand are incomplete. What we think we know is just a step along the way. And I think, for me at least, it helps me take myself and the things around me less seriously, right? It's just, it's not, you know, we're just on an adventure intellectually. And as an institution, as when I work with my students and postdocs, I tell them we do these things because we want to have fun. And discovering new things is, well, some days scary because you're working on very soft ground. You're doing things that are probably wrong. And when you finally figure it out, though, it really is very rewarding. And, you know, that's what makes research exciting. I think in building a place like this, in many ways, it's my first experience of doing something like starting a new business. And it's helped me appreciate the scary parts of that, realizing that you're setting off in a new direction and no one really knows the right answers. But the rewarding aspects of feeling that you're building something that will have an impact, and realizing that your vision can help shape the way an institution will grow.
That's so true. You mentioned to me, and then I used it in the opening, that one of the things that you're trying to do, along with this unfair advantage, which is a wonderful term. I mean, in business, we often ask, as a coach, I often ask people, what's your competitive advantage? But I really kind of like the unfair advantage. You mentioned that you want to grow both slowly and quickly. Talk a little bit more about why that's part of your formula and how it may, in fact, allow you to get to that goal of 55 people in a short period of time.
Yeah, so what's unusual about the way we're structured is because we're funded by the foundation, I have a pretty well-defined budget. So I know what my target size is. And I knew that if I tried to bring in people who were all expecting to be on long-term permanent positions, you know, I'm operating in an environment where I'm competing for the best talent with places that offer tenure, you know, top universities and the places like, you know, Berkeley and Carnegie Mellon and universities all over the world, that if I brought in all long-term people early on, if I grew too fast in bringing in permanent people, I wouldn't attract the best people, and it wouldn't be a stable situation. On the other hand, I thought it was important to relatively quickly create a sense of excitement and attract outstanding talent. So the strategy I've been pursuing is to bring in lots of people whose positions will clearly be short-term. So it's traditional in academia that after you get your PhD, you spend 3 years as a postdoctoral researcher. So nearly half the people at the Institute will be postdoctoral researchers. Another opportunity, which I've already mentioned, is bringing in sabbatical visitors. So these are one-year appointments, and we're bringing in people from really all over the world, Dick Stuart, someone from France and Israel, And we're taking advantage of the fact we can provide funding for them, and New York's an attractive place. One of our unfair advantages is New York's a solution for lots of people's two-body career problems. And the third way we're doing this is we're having a series of joint appointments with neighboring universities where the appointments last with us for 3 to 6 years. We help bring the people to the region. But then they end up as tenured faculty at the surrounding universities. So we're strengthening the whole region in computational science. As a result of this combination of positions, over two-thirds, nearly three-quarters of the people we have at our institute are short-term. So we'll be constantly bringing in new people. So in a sense, we'll be growing slowly in terms of the rate at which we hire people who will be with us for the long term. So it's that balance of quickly and slowly that I think will let us continue to be intellectually vibrant, to bring in new people and new ideas, yet at the same time allow us to get to the critical mass where we become a major intellectual center relatively quickly.
David, I really think you're on to something from an entrepreneurial HR strategy standpoint that I have not heard a lot of entrepreneurs speak about. They often talk about the challenge of being able to pay for the talent that they need, and the assumption is that people need to be full-time. And so one of the reasons I've asked you, in a sense, to repeat the strategy and go into a little more depth a second time is I'm hoping that the entrepreneurs listening can think about that strategy. As we begin to close, I know that there are entrepreneurs that have already gone to the internet and said, okay, so let me Google Flatiron Institute. Let me find out how I can do business with them, since in fact they have all these resources. Who are the people that you, quote unquote, do business with, and who are the people that want to do business with you, given that your mission is to advance scientific research through computational methods, including data analysis, modeling, and simulation? So I'm trying to, you know, help the entrepreneurs that are saying, can I get a contract with this? I'll just be one. So what's the answer to that?
Well, what we're, I think, primarily doing is being an intellectual center, developing new techniques in data science and statistical methods. There's lots of areas where things like machine learning are being applied in new businesses in novel ways. What we're doing is applying these same techniques into basic research and advancing these techniques. And I think what we'll be doing is we'll be developing and training people who will end up being the kind of people that a lot of these startups in data science will want to hire. So, you know, from the undergraduates in our summer program to some of our researchers who are by design there for short term, I think one of the things we'll do is we'll be a resource that's training the next generations of innovators in data science and machine learning. I'm hoping what we'll be doing is developing methodologies that will be useful, you know, not only for pure research, for addressing questions like what's the universe made of and how do planets form, but techniques that will be valuable across a wide range of areas. So I think another role I'm hoping we'll play is to be an intellectual center that will be interacting with the growing data science community in New York. We're already developing connections with some of the research centers run by places like Facebook and Google and Microsoft that are all located with actually within a few blocks of us. So I see those you know, examples of some of the partnerships we'll develop over time.
That's, again, that's really, really powerful, because I think that there, as people hear an intellectual center, They may not be entirely sure what that means, but you are taking well-developed talent at the undergraduate level, the graduate level, the PhD level, and you're leveraging their scientific research minds to help figure out problems and issues that in the future may lead to something that gets operationalized later on. So the fact that you can help grow people or develop people who the commercial world, entrepreneurs who need innovators can leverage, that's very useful.
My hope is just as Stanford has played a vital role in the San Francisco Bay Area and MIT in the Boston area, that we will be part of the community of universities and research centers with our partners, with Cornell's new campus, that helps make New York sort of the intellectual center for novel techniques in data science. And I think that will create an environment that will be an environment in which entrepreneurs building businesses in that area will kind of want to take advantage of the people and the excitement around that.
Wonderful. Well, I'm, just looking at what you've done in a little over 10 months, I can only imagine that given 2 or 3 years, shall I say, the sky's the limit. So, David, I appreciate your time. Would you let the listening audience know how they can get in touch with you? What's the best website to read more about the Flatiron Institute?
So if you Google the Flatiron Institute, that will take you to our website. If you're interested in learning some astronomy, I've got 20 hours of free lectures available on Coursera. So just Google me and you'll find my free lectures to get a sense of what's going on there. And for getting a hold of me, probably the best way is always email.
Excellent. Well, David, I am hoping that as your organization continues to grow, that there will be some opportunities where entrepreneurs and innovators can network with the Flatiron Institute to hear you and your strategic partners talk about ways that the community that you're building can interact with the entrepreneurs and innovators. I think there's some, I know that the Googles and the Facebooks will get the first opportunity, but I think in the long term, this would really be a great opportunity for some of the smaller and newer entrepreneurs to see what's happening in the future, literally now. So thanks again for being a guest on Significant Business Results Radio, and I look forward to hearing more about you, the Flatiron Institute, and thank you so much for the offer for people to get a chance to work with you for free through Coursera. So have a great evening.
Pleasure talking to you.
Thanks. So, folks, you've just been listening to David Spergel with the Flatiron Institute. And to learn more about his institute, please feel free to Google Flatiron Institute.
Significant Business Results Radio features concise and compelling interviews with entrepreneurs and business leaders, hosted by Fran McNeil, President of Significant Business Results, LLC. Follow Significant Business Results Radio on blogtalkradio.com/significantbusinessresults.